Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel-centered resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry and author in residence at Midwestern Seminary. And I'm here as always with my friend and my colleague and my co-host.
And companion.
And companion and comrade and compatriot and colleague.
I think you said
Ross Ferguson. Did I say colleague twice?
I think you may have said it twice. I'm twice as important to you as a colleague.
That's good.
I don't know if that's good.
Co-chair of the podcast, Ross Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, we're kind of lagging on reviews lately.
We are lagging on
I
reviews.
I think another guilt trip is in order.
So here's my kind of guilt trip.
Okay.
There's so many things in life that you have to pay for.
Ooh.
And, you know, those even content. Sneaky ones, like there's a certain provider. I can't even think of the word without saying the company's name. There's, you know, when you...
What's the product?
Video.
Oh, like streaming.
Streaming. That's okay. It. I was looking for the streaming providers that have now added ads and you have to pay more.
Yeah.
To every month to avoid the ads. They just sneak that in. You go down to the local donut store. The donuts are now a little bit more expensive. You go and get your coffee. It's a little bit more expensive.
My coffee
now.
Was... about 34 cents more expensive this week than it was last week.
Exactly.
Same exact drink.
And do you know what? The FTC podcast has been what? Free.
Ooh.
And has never changed price.
Man.
So, folks,
it may be taxing to your soul, but it doesn't cost you anything.
But it costs you no money.
Yeah.
But surely, for something free,
you could leave,
you could leave a review.
Wow. That's actually pretty good. And not really even a guilt trip. It's
not
just
really.
Kind of a good
That's
motivation.
Just, yeah.
Better than me. I'm just saying, don't be a lazy bones. Get out there and bump our numbers up. We do have a couple of new reviews. This one comes from Ricky G, 5 stars. I think I know this fellow. He's a pastor in Texas, I believe. Ricky G says, thankful for this pod. Is that what the kids are calling it nowadays? I think so, Ricky. He says, had no idea Jay Swizzle had a sultry singing voice. I don't know if sultry is the word that I want there. It's more of a feminine quality. Especially right now that I've got 10 pounds of mucus in my head.
Lovely.
Maybe these two fine men can go on a tour.
Oh, yeah.
Ross can read some Chalmers. Maybe he means Chalmers, like Thomas Chalmers, or is it something else? Anyway, can read some Chalmers, and Jay Swizz can sing some Sinatra. I'd buy tickets to that. Hashtag don't quit your day jobs. Wow.
So I think we can go on tour, but I don't think any of us are reading or singing.
No, maybe not. I heard some Sinatra on the drive in this morning, actually.
We should take the FTC podcast on tour.
All righty. Thank you, Ricky G. I'm going to assume that was all because of the 5 stars. It was all complimentary. This is Sanford Perez Jr. Man, giving us the full name. None of these hot ticket nicknames coming right on out. Sanford Perez Jr. Such a dope podcast. I guess that's what the kids are saying nowadays. 5 stars. I love this podcast so much. One of my favorites. I binge for almost 2 months while working and listen to every episode. Grateful for everyone that has been a part of it. Such great content. Pastoral, down to earth, and hilarious. Thankful for you both. Triple exclamation points. 5 stars. Thank you so much, Sanford.
5 stars and has listened to every episode and still 5 stars.
Goes all the way back, even to those solo
episodes.
Those
original ones.
But I think he's thankful for us both, so he's glad that there are no more solo episodes. Yeah, those are some good reviews. And I'll just put it on the front end again. You should leave us a good review, Apple Podcasts or Spotify. I think on Spotify, you don't leave reviews. It's just stars.
Spotify, you just star it.
Yeah.
If you're on Apple Podcasts, you can star and write a review.
And as we said before, even better... pump it up on social media.
Yeah, I've seen a little bit more of sharing. Yeah, share an episode. What episode have you loved? Get on Twitter, get on Facebook, get on Instagram, share it to let people know it's there.
You know, everywhere I go, people talk about the podcast,
yep.
And I always try to make a mental note to remind myself. In fact, someone gave me a gift for you. I brought it. Well, this last Sunday I was sick, so I wasn't there. But the Sunday before I brought it.
And I wasn't there.
And you weren't there.
Because I was preaching
so,
somewhere
but
else.
But it's in my preacher bag that I bring, so I'll make sure that you get it.
Okay.
Yeah, I was in North Carolina, and someone came up and they handed this thing to me. And I was like, whoa. And he's like, this is for Ross. He's like, I listened to the podcast, wanted to... you'd be able to bring something back for him. I was like, glad to do it.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's a deal, man.
Yeah.
Like, you travel around, people really enjoy the podcast.
Well,
at church, people come up to me and they're like, hey, why don't you do an episode on this? Why don't you do an episode on that?
And we usually go,
Sometimes I file it away.
Different conferences, different. I've been in different classes, even hearing students will say what they usually say is, "You're on a podcast with Jared Wilson." And I'm like, "Whoa, okay, I see how this works."
No, he's on with me. That's what he used to say.
Yeah,
he makes me watch stupid Danish movies. today's subject matter is when a church changes. Mm. When a church changes, I wanted to just talk a little bit about how church members should respond, how they might adjust or even just process changes in their church. And this could be a variety of different kinds of changes. Maybe we should talk about that. What are some significant ways that churches change? I think the first thing that comes to mind for me, the first thing I kind of had in mind coming up with this idea is when a church grows or even if a church declines. Yep. Yeah, because any fluctuation significantly in attendance changes a church. In fact, you can't grow and not change. And in some ways, you can't shrink and not change. Some people say shrinking is a result of staying the same and never changing. But as a church declines, it begins to change in some ways, even if it's just the dynamic of the people who are there. But as a church grows, it changes. And sometimes that makes people uneasy. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, in my experience, people say they want to grow until they do.
Yep.
And then once the church grows, it changes. And it's what they want is the church to grow and stay exactly as it is, to feel exactly the same.
It's the situation of, hey, pastor, can you help this church grow? And by the way, don't change a thing. And my last church, there was a lot of change, from very big changes to really small changes. There was a lot of change. I think you can think alongside practical. So building, chairs, rooms, you know, just even the yard out front. There's lots of practical changes that can change to building. There's ministry changes, ministries closing, ministries opening, ministry leaders changing. There's spiritual changes even, and I'm not going theological yet, but just the spiritual, like the feeling within a church.
Yeah.
You know, this is a joyful church. This is a gracious church. That can change to this is a church going through trial and feeling quite low in the time. There's theological changes. My last church, we had multiple major theological changes. And I think all of them, the general response to any form of change, the general response in a church is one of uneasiness. Even if you're excited about it, there's an uneasiness. In fact, I think it's relatively rare to have a church member that goes, change, great, let's do it. And they don't feel uneasy at any level. And actually some of those, if you have lots of those people, you should maybe worry about that, you know, that they don't care about any change. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
And it's that uneasiness, I think, is the almost normal response. And it's what can we do better in that moment? You know, how can we not be uneasy when it comes to change? Some change you should fear, you should be worried about, you should have to some extent negative feelings towards. But I don't know if that's the type of change we're talking about.
Yeah, I think let's talk about changes that are, on paper at least, would seem positive.
Yep.
The church is growing.
Yep. New families coming to church.
Church is reaching people, things like that. Because, if we're talking about churches making theological shifts that are away from orthodoxy or tonal shifts away from a joyous presence to it's more of a dour, restrictive, judgmental environment— those are negative changes, of course, that, you know, people, process those in ways that may be commensurate with church discipline or confronting elders or things like that. But sometimes we take that tack with just changes we're uncomfortable with, which aren't otherwise. Just because you are uncomfortable with something doesn't mean that it's wrong. So let's talk about positive changes, ostensibly positive changes that just discomfort.
Well, let's take this as an example. Both in Liberty Baptist right now, we're experiencing this, and I experienced this in my last church that I served in as well. When growth brings a problem of where does everybody sit?
Yeah.
So we had that issue in the last church that we were kind of cramming seats in as much as we can. We have that issue in Liberty in that we can't actually fit everybody in one service. So how do you handle the very positive, hey, lots of people are coming to church?
Yeah.
And then the negative, but no one can sit anywhere. And I think one of the things that has really come to mind on this subject, and I was actually in a class and we were discussing this in a class, is the one another statements in scripture. Mm-hmm. I think one another is a really good approach to a change like that. So when you go into church, you can't find a seat. The uneasiness builds, the uncomfortableness builds. This is where I normally sit. I can't see the front. I feel really tight in here. I feel like my kids are hemmed in. I feel like we've grown too big. I don't really know everybody. You know, all those kind of things come to your mind. But all of those start with the me. This is what I feel and I think. Where actually, if we begin to switch that into one another thinking, that will help change those uneasiness, uncomfortable thoughts into something that's positive. And just to have a kind of few here in terms of one another statements that are in scripture, Romans 12, 16, live in harmony with one another. So actually coming to church and thinking, man, yep, it's really tight. So I'm going to do my best ability that I'm not a negative influence in this. Yeah. You know, if I have to share half a chair, I'll share half a chair. I'm going to live in harmony with this really busy church, or be humble towards one another, or encourage one another. Even down to this, wash one another's feet. Now, we might not be literally washing one another's feet, but we might say, hey, take my seat. This is you can sit here. I'll stand at the back. I think if we think along those lines, what we're actually doing is Philippians 2. We're putting others before ourselves. We're putting their interests, their comfort. And if a church wholly does that, then you're almost fighting over how to help one another in this really busy setting. And I've been in churches like that where it's really tight for space and everyone's just like falling over each other to encourage one another. No, you sit here. No, you take this chair. No, you get out the front, you know. And that's just a wonderful feeling. You take something that could be negative and you say, do you know what? We're just not going to feel uncomfortable about this. I think Liberty does a half decent job of that. I think our struggle is that we physically literally couldn't get everybody into that room. But even in that, it's that one anothering off, hey, you really want to go to the first service. Do you know what? I'll go to the second so you can fit into the first service because I know with your family that might be easier. Hmm. That one another, the one anothering, I think will remove the uneasiness and uncomfortableness.
Yeah, Romans 12:10, outdo one another, showing honor. It's almost like a backwards or reverse gamesmanship.
Yeah.
I'm trying to lose so that you may win. And we're going back and forth wanting to outdo one another with deference and service. I think what you're describing there, what the New Testament is describing there, is people who see the church, first of all, as a people to whom I'm committed, with whom I am covenanting, rather than an experience to which I have an affinity or have preferences. And we all have preferences. I remember this is years ago, but in a new members class, in fact, it might have been the new members class that Becky and I were in to become new members. This might have been, you know, nearly 8 years ago. But in any event, it was new members class. And basically somebody was going around the room, what do you like about Liberty, you know, Baptist Church, or what brought you here? And somebody said, and their response was, I like how small it is. And which is fine. We have preferences. People like small churches, people like big churches, and et cetera. But inside, coming from where, you know, my experience in my last church, which was a church that went from small to slightly less small, if that makes sense. We didn't get big, but we tripled, nearly quadrupled in size, but still a small church by, you know, church standards. But in any event, the growth was significant to the point that people became so uncomfortable that it's not the same church. It's not not the tiny, it's not, you know, the families I know anymore.
Yep.
And I got a little nervous when I didn't say anything, but inside I was thinking, okay, but what happens if it's not small anymore? Yep. You're going to commit to us as long as we're small.
Yeah.
But what happens if we grow? And at what point are we, in your mind, not small? I mean, comparatively, we're still, you know, some churches would look at Liberty Baptist Church and go, what are y'all talking about? Yeah. Like, you're not, you know, we're out of room, but we're not a big church. We're not a mega church or anything.
Yeah, I think American-wise, we're still kind of small.
I think we're normative size probably. So, or we're in that range. But what I want to know is like, oh, are you committed to me only as long as there's only, you know, 250 of me?
Yeah.
What happens when there's 300 of me, 400 of me?
No one wants 400 of you,
Well, Jared. You know what I mean.
But yeah, it is a preference.
You're committed to the church so long as, so that's a commitment to an idea.
Yeah.
That's a commitment to a preference. That's a commitment to an experience, not to a people.
Yep.
And if I have a commitment to a people, there's going to be a short list of things that are going to make me not commit to that people.
Yep.
It doesn't mean that I would never remove my covenant fellowship from that people, but it means the list of things that would cause me to do that would be relatively short.
It's actually, that's a really good point, because when Miriam and I first moved to Kansas City, it was the first time in 10 years I hadn't pastored a church. And it was kind of that awkward moment of like, where do you go as a church? We haven't done this in a long time to go as, you know, look for members. And we landed on Liberty. We've been at Liberty ever since. And, you know, you and I have talked about this. I don't agree with everything that happens or is said at Liberty. But one of the things is when you're committed to the people and they become your local embassy family of the big family, actually those annoyances and frustrations, you can just go, well, okay, we disagree on that one. That's okay. That's not a big deal, because you're my family. You're the ones I'm doing this with. Now, if you don't have that feeling, if you don't come to it going, as a member of the body of Christ, as one suffers, we all suffer, as one rejoices, we all rejoice, we're in this together as the local embassy, then those small frustrations become massive frustrations if you don't have that mindset. Because actually, you're not a body. You're the thorn in the side saying,
a messenger from Satan.
Well, it is, but that's what it is. I want my preferences and this body has to follow that. Yeah. And that is a thorn in the side. And I think for me, this kind of one anothering only can happen when you first and foremost see that this is the local body of believers and you're part of that body of Christ and you love them. And, you know, Miriam and I do a lot of traveling with Pulpit Supply. I visited some local churches where, you know, students have attended to see where they go and things. And every Sunday, it's the same thing. It's like, oh, you know, this worship's really good, or this sermon's really good, or I really like this building. But it always feels a little bit stale. Nothing to do with them, everything to do with me. I'm not with my family. So I can be as welcomed as you like. It's still not going to feel as welcoming as my own church family. And I think going through changes together, I would far rather do those changes together and have awkward change than do changes with people I don't have a clue who they are. And that means your initial mindset has to be, this is my family. We're taking a break from our episode today to let you know about the upcoming Nine Marks at Midwestern Conference happening on April 16th and 17th on the Midwestern Seminary campus.
As a listener of the For the Church podcast, you get 50% off your conference tickets. Just enter code FTC9MARKS when you register to apply your discount. Check out the show notes for links to register. I'll be speaking at the conference along with several other ministry leaders across the country, so I hope to see you in Kansas City for the conference soon. The family, though, this is it's a really interesting dynamic, because there are some people who say, like, no, I have committed to this family, but the family's constantly changing. The family's not the same people it was. Yeah. And so that's the change. Maybe we could talk about that for a little bit.
Sure.
That was a significant issue at my last church, where very clearly became a sort of an church 1.0 and church 2.0.
Yeah.
Those who'd been there for decades, yep, or at least were relatively, you know, old and familiar. And as the church began to grow and we were, you know, bringing in families and folks from other areas, even we're driving in. I mean, you know, we're in rural New England, and so there's not a church on every corner. There's not even gospel preaching churches in every town. And so sometimes if word gets out, people are like, oh, I can bring my family there, and it's closer than I've been driving. And so our church started to grow. And for some of our folks, like, that's awesome. We've been praying for this for years. Like, we've been wanting to grow. We don't want to be a church that's, you know, plateaued or dying. But for others, it was like, well, they want to grow until suddenly the seat that they normally sit in is full.
Yep.
It's hard to find a parking space. There's lots of faces they don't recognize. It's putting them out of their comfort zone. It doesn't feel like the family table used to feel like. We've now added all these tables and card tables, and it feels wonky. There's a awkward adjustment period, and some they're just like, I don't like that. I'd rather it go back to. And I mean, you know, practically had people even say that to me. It's just not the same. Yeah. I wish it was like it was before, you know, and which is like saying, I wish all these people would leave.
Yeah.
And so the dynamic in a church family is like, this is a family I'm committing to. You bring in a new member and you're like, oh, you complete us now. And then another member comes in, oh, you complete us now. Yeah. We didn't actually know that. The family is constantly changing. Yeah. It's like your kids are all going and getting married, and now they're bringing in these in-laws and things. And you're like, Is this the family that I signed up for? Yeah. I don't know. Is this the family that makes me comfortable?
The most obvious negative response to that is to just get up and leave. So yeah. In my last church, I did have people like that. Yeah. You know, we went from a church of kind of 35, 40 people to a church of kind of pushing north of 130, 140 type thing. And there was some people that just went, nope, I'm out. And I would say that those individuals weren't actually committed to the family. They were committed to the history of being there.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've seen it through this, I've been here. Yeah. But that, again, is the selfish, this is my church, not this is the family that I'm part of. So I would argue that people that just get up and leave, and when I mean get up and leave, literally just one day just go, yeah, I'm done. I don't like this anymore. I don't think they are committed to the family in the first place. So that's the kind of most obvious negative. But on the positive side, I think there's two things here. I think there is a responsibility on the church member, and there's also a responsibility on the church leadership. I think the church member, ultimately, it's reminding yourself that everybody coming in, if we have this mindset of outdoing one another to serve one another, everybody coming in is coming to serve you, and you're coming to serve them. And there is this reality of, so you can't find your seat again. Well, maybe just ask some people around you. Hey, I used to sit down there. There's a reason why I sat down there. I'm finding this kind of change a little bit difficult. Can you help me out? Here's the thing, is that seems like a very reasonable thing to say. But when change happens, we're not reasonable often. Hmm. So I think there is a member thing of recognizing the beauty of that change. And because I'm Scottish, I often recognize the negative first. And I have to work hard at actually going, do you know what? I'm not going to see the negative. I can see the positive here. And so I think there's a mindset shift in the church members. But I think a lot of this falls down to how the church is led. So in the last church we were in, again, we kind of tripled in size. So we did open houses at my house, and we just invited like any church member that wants to come to our house. We would have 60 people at our house, and we would just feed them food. We would have fellowship meals after Sunday. We would do walks together. We'd had Saturday 5-kilometer walks we would go on together. You know, just anything we can do to bring people together. It wasn't ministry heavy. It wasn't about let's do another ministry and that'll bring people together. It was just giving avenues for people to join together. So we had house groups, walking groups. And again, these were not official ministries. They were not like we were trying to load up and do church. It was more, I recognize you don't know who this person is. So let's give you a place to do that. We did testimony evenings just to try and help that change not seem so scary. These are normal people with normal issues and normal joys in their life. And the other thing in that was helping that generational level, because that's really often where the big problems come.
Right.
Families will stick together, older people stick together, younger people stick together. Well, if you can break those walls down, then actually change is not scary. Change is exciting. And I remember one particular Dutch lady, Fiep. Fiep was a lovely little old lady. She'd probably late 80s, very difficult walking. She kind of really struggled. She was like 4'3" or something, really find it hard to walk in church as church got really busy. And Fiep would be nervous because she's kind of walking through a lot of different people. And because we had worked hard on this kind of multi-generational thing, we started getting younger people to like clear the way for Fiep, and Fiep gets her seat, and Fiep, we've got your little footstool for your seat. And it became this loving act of, that's all of our grandmother. And would we bump into our own grandmother on purpose? No. So we're all doing this. So, but that was led from the front. Yeah. I think sometimes it's the, probably not the best analogy, but the bottom up in terms of the membership showing a willingness, but also the leadership helping that willingness to come to the forefront.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I think in terms of leadership too, in helping people adjust to change, is to do what you can to, especially if you're introducing change. So, you know, some things like if the church is growing at a particular pace, you know, you can make accommodations for breaking down those intergenerational walls, for allowing or facilitating or just encouraging more fellowships and things like that. But when you're introducing change, so maybe a shift to, hey, our church really needs to focus on outreach. Our church really needs to focus. These are things that we as leaders have noticed is a deficiency in our church. And this is going to be a huge thing for some folks to get outside their comfort zone to embrace this. Or we're going to do a building campaign, or we're going to add this program that's different, or we're going to cut this program that's different. One of the things to do in terms of leading that is an incremental introduction, almost like you're kind of helping people wade into the change rather than just like, voila, on this Sunday, boom, here it is, everybody, we're doing this right now. You know, hold people's hands while you lead them through change. People want to feel led, not pushed. And so to the extent that you're able to show people your, you know, your cards, to be as transparent as possible, give them the reasons for the change. This isn't just some arbitrary, we want to do something different, we want to shake it up, but there's biblical, missional reasons for this. This is a strategic decision that we've arrived at. Here's how we arrived at this. Here's how we're going to do it. We're going to be really patient. If possible, we're going to move slowly. Do whatever you can to help people feel led into something, to an embrace of something, rather than just, you know, we want you to conform to this idea that we've got. Even if for some folks, like, they're going to be, you know, gung-ho about it, others are going to be like, that's different. It's a little, I'm not sure. You need to be very patient when leading change initiatives and those sorts of things.
I remember when we redid our whole platform area in the church and we were flooring it, everyone was in agreement, but we had an open baptistry, which is not necessarily common in the UK. Normally it's
what does that mean, an open baptistry?
So your baptistry doesn't have a lid on it.
Oh, okay.
Where in the UK, most churches would have a lid on it. It's on the platform in the middle, and usually you lift the lid.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And so ours was open, and it was open, you know, there was no lid on it. And when we redid the platform, we decided that we're actually, I think it's probably sensible to put a lid on it, the one that we can remove for baptisms. And the church wasn't particularly happy about it. So we kind of built the platform and then left the baptistry open. And then had a members meeting where we actually brought the members to view the platform that had kind of been in the building phase, and then gave them four options of here's the four options, open, and here's three different covers. Ask your questions. You know, the guys are here that they can talk you through it. You know, so they had seen it, they had talked through it. We showed them all the options. We gave them some time to think about it. And we said, look, you know, we're being really honest. This is the one we think is right, which is actually to close it with this lid. But hey, if you're thinking something different, talk with us, you know.
Yeah.
And in the end, actually, the vote was like 98% to the one element. And it was because we paused the construction and said, we know that you're nervous about this. So let's just pause. And let's talk about it. Let's show you. And we actually got mock-ups of pictures of what it would look like. We went even to the extreme of like, you know, we could put a lid on it, but then we could take some bricks out here and you can see through it. You know, like we tried every option and then said, but when we look at all these options, we believe this is the sensible one. What do you think? And I was nervous at that setting because when you handhold people kind of through those things, the change that you're hoping for might not actually occur because they might turn around and go, thanks for helping us understand this, but that's not what we are going to do.
Yeah.
But I think more often than not that when you're going through that kind of handholding process, even you're willing to say, I'm okay if the church is going to go a different direction. And I was kind of, even myself as I led the church, was feeling they were leading me to understand so it's not as big a deal as you think it is type thing. We ended up flooring it. Everyone was happy and we kind of moved on. But it was that we could have easily in the construction just powered ahead and just did it and be like, hey, it's changed. You got to just roll with it.
Yeah.
But by not doing that, we had actually gained a lot of respect within the church setting. And like 3 months later, we had a baptism. We had seven people baptized. The lid came off. Everyone, you know, it was like one of those things.
Literally and metaphorically.
Yeah. And it was kind of one of those situations of like, why did we ever even have a problem with this? Yeah. And it was because we had gone that gentle process.
I think like one way for church members to adjust to change, or at least become open to it, is to understand that everything that's established was a change at some point.
Yes.
Everything was new at some point. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of to the point what you're saying is like, yeah, after a while, it's sort of like, oh, this is how it's...
Yeah, that's just the way it was.
This is how it is. Yeah. This is just normal, you know?
Can I ask the question on... We're talking about like light changes, I would say. Even just some fabric changes to buildings, I still think are relatively light. I think positive changes like the church growing, there's always that kind of positive thing that's happening. What about big changes? So we've both been part of churches that have had fairly massive negative changes in moments, or either fairly massive positive changes, and they're big. It changes what the church is like every day. I think handling change on a small, nice level, we can kind of all learn good lessons and patience with each other. But what happens in a situation where actually the church that you know, either in an instant or over time, is completely different? Like it feels everything is changing.
Yeah.
How do you handle that change? Like monumental change? Is it just the same type of behaviors, or is there other things we can do?
Yeah, I don't know. I've thought about this a lot in relation to our, you know, to our church, you know, because as some of our listeners will know, you know, a couple of years ago, our previous senior pastor disqualified himself. And I don't know if that's what you're alluding to in terms of like a major change. There's yeah. been other big changes just in the wake of that, staffing changes and things. But that was a huge yeah. deal. And in a lot of churches, that's not just a huge blow to the church. It is usually followed by an exodus yeah. of folks. And we were preparing even others and even leaders for the dynamic of like, once you find a solution, no matter what it is,
yeah.
you hire a new senior pastor, yeah. which is not what we did, but people leave. So they're yeah. like, they're waiting to see who's the next guy is. Yeah. And if it's not a guy that they voted for off or not the guy they yeah. want, people leave. That's what's pretty common when a pastor leaves for whatever reason. They resign for good reasons or whatever, but in our case, it was, you know, it was a train wreck, essentially. When a pastor leaves, people leave. When a pastor comes, people leave.
Yeah.
We didn't really see significant no. loss. Yeah. You know, we had a few folks, you know, drop out, but not what I was expecting. Yeah. And I've asked myself about this.
Why do you think that
bit.
Happened?
I think in general, the people of our, and I think it's the same reason why for 2 years we were without a main preaching voice and the elders and others were just kind of rotating through, and you could come 6 weeks in a row and hear a different preacher, and we continued to grow. We didn't see significant loss, and we had people continue to join the church. I think it's because generally at our church, people love not just the preacher, but the kind of preaching. Mm-hmm. They're dedicated to that. Expository preaching, Christ as the point. There's different flavors and styles yeah. and experience levels that we bring when different preachers are up there, but I think our people were committed to
yeah.
that, and it's still pretty unique, maybe even. Yeah. I don't know if it's unique for our area, but it's still pretty unique that people continue to join. It's the same. It's a similar answer to the question, why didn't we see significant during COVID or the political stuff?
Yeah.
Like almost every guy I know, maybe you too, I don't know. But when I travel around, people are dropping like flies, man, the last yeah. 3 or 4 years, and we couldn't get anything going. And
yeah.
there's nothing I could do during the social justice conversation. There's nothing I could do during the COVID conversation. And people just up and yeah. leaving, and the whole, there's a different church now. And
yeah.
we're like, well, ours is a different church too, but not for that
yeah.
reason. Somebody asked me recently, how are you preparing your people for the 2024 election? And I thought, this is the first I've actually even thought of that.
We're not.
Yeah. You know? I mean, it's not, yeah. maybe I'm deluding myself, but 2016, it wasn't a huge deal at our church, and yeah. I mean, everyone has opinions. I'm not like so naive that I don't think people aren't political or
yeah, yeah.
have their political views. And I would venture to guess that most folks in our church, if they vote, they're voting for a particular candidate and party. Yeah. But I just don't see it's not a point of division for us.
So I think what we experience.
So what are we doing?
Yeah,
if anything,
I think it is the preaching side, but I think it's a little bit deeper than that. As well as like what feeds that preaching. And I think what feeds that preaching is the fact that we are very much a church that puts Jesus front and center. And in my last church through COVID, we had this weird situation where we were basically the only church in the city that grew during major lockdown. UK had much bigger lockdowns. We grew within 2 months. We were growing as a church. And I couldn't put my finger on that as at the time, thinking like, this is crazy. We should be experiencing right. a negative response here. And I asked people that were coming to the church, why is it that you're coming? Like, why are you leaving your church? So push factors were always the same. It feels disingenuous at my church now. Pull factors were always the same. You just seem to love Jesus at your church. And that seemed to come through. So one of the things, even through COVID, we made the commitment to the church that we would make no kind of public broadcast on anything related to do with COVID. Like, we're not going to talk about vaccinations. We're not going to talk yeah. about that. And you could do this the same with like the presidential race here. We're just not going to be talking about the political major issue of this time. What we're going to be talking about is Christ and what that means to follow him, even in this time.
Yeah.
And I think when that shift happens, I feel like people are almost crying out for that. They're almost kind of saying, but I live in this world for 6 days a week. I really don't want to have to do the same thing again on a Sunday.
Yeah.
I feel like there is a
difference. This is not the same thing, though, as like helping people apply Christianity.
We're not saying like we talk about Jesus void of the world we live in.
Sure.
What we're saying is Jesus comes first. And because of that, we can then apply that to our life rather than, hey, you know, it's a presidential race this year. And because of that, we need to know this verse. It's actually, hey, this is the verse we're preaching on today. And can you see how that can apply to our time today? You know, I think that type of church experiences change in a much more positive, almost exciting way.
Yeah.
Of, you know, even in this last 2 years, it's been moments of tough things at Liberty, but there's also that kind of air of excitement of what's God going to do with our church? You know, where's he going to take us? Which is a very strange feeling.
Yeah. I think there's something about the commitment to the same message over and over again, different texts, different contexts, but a commitment to the gospel, to Jesus first, as you said, for churches that say, hey, we're going to beat this same drum.
Mm-hmm.
For some, they're like, that's monotonous, that gets old, whatever. But for others, it creates a rootedness.
Yeah.
No matter what's going on socially, politically, culturally, there's a rootedness here. Yeah. I know I'm being brought back to the foundational truths that even like preaching through books of the Bible, like I don't know what's, or like we're going to start Acts the week after Easter. We'll take some breaks here and there, but we're going to preach through Acts. I don't know what's going to be happening on the calendar beyond this, you know, election. I mean, I don't know what's going to be going on, but we're going to be preaching through Acts and we're just trusting the Lord providentially. I think that creates endurance in a people and a kind of unshakability in a people as well. Like, no, this is what we're doing. We're committed to the Bible, and the Bible comes first. That's our priority. I think churches that do that help their people be able to absorb not just external change, but internal change as well. Also just as a word of caution, as we kind of wrap up here, for leaders who like change, pushing change, leading change, strategic change, you know, initiatives, this is how you keep a church growing, is by introducing change constantly. There is such a thing as change fatigue for a church.
100%.
If you introduce too much, if you're the kind of guy who's just one campaign after another, which hill are we going to take next?
Mm.
Like, you may be really burning your people out as they're trying to constantly adjust. The issue there isn't people's lack of adjustment. It's maybe you're bombarding them with a lack of stability and a lack of, you know, calmness and reasonableness. So in some ways, lead them normally with a faithful plodding that roots them in the scriptures.
Mm-hmm.
So when then it does come time for change, either something you've initiated or just something that just has happened in your church, they're actually more prepared for that. They're on stable ground when that happens and they've got their wits about them.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't like limit it down to like one change a year or one change a season. That's still even thinking a law thing of like, here's a rule that I have to set. Just be watching your people and you'll know. I think when you shepherd your people, you'll know when you can just tell, man, they look like they're stressed about another change. Let's just can that for now.
Yeah.
And we'll come back to it in a later day. Watching your people daily will tell you the limit of change that they're currently able to cope with.
That's good. Don't change your podcast favorites, dear reader.
But do change your podcast habits
if you don't review.
Leaving reviews.
Change your non-reviewing habit to review us. Give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church.
You've been listening to the For the Church podcast, hosted by Jared Wilson, found online at ftc.co. This resource is brought to you by Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, where we train leaders for the church.